I have friends who, you know, can function and I can't. Like, every month cannot function. So I was like, this is just apples and oranges. I know it's not right. And sure enough, it was a few months after the acquisition. So I was at Urban Stems and I finally got an appointment with a specialist and they did an MRI and they found late stage endometriosis all over my uterus, kidneys, bowels. So it wasn't just in, you know, that area, it had spread to my other organs. And truly, my surgeon looked at me after seeing the MRI results and was like, I'm so sorry, I don't know how anyone could have possibly lived like this.
Thank you for tuning in to the Mile 40 podcast. I am Bishoy Tadros, the author of Break Barriers and Audacious, both of which are sold on Amazon. And I invite you to join me as I engage with guests to discuss those bounce back moments that we encounter on our personal journey. Mile 40 is a forum to learn about how athletes, professionals, and leaders of all backgrounds stare down moments in life where the only option is to rise up. The Mile 40 podcast strives to remind listeners that the comeback is always greater than the setback. Welcome back to another episode of the Mile 40 podcast. Thank you all for just all of your input. It's crazy to think that we are approaching our 80th episode, and I am very excited for today's episode. Before we dive in, if you haven't already, please be sure to hit subscribe. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, wherever you get your podcast from, you know, I repeat this every week, but you guys are taking advantage. So I'm going to remind you, there is a discount code in the show notes for either Audacious or Break Barriers. So if you'd like to pick a copy of either book, check out the discount code in the show notes and grab it today. Today's guest is Kelly Ann Parker. Kelly Ann Parker is the bootstrapped founder of Send Ribbon, a corporate gifting company that was acquired by Series C company Urban Stems in 2020. Since the exit of her company, Kelly has launched B2BKP to help other founders launch, grow, and exit their companies. She's a speaker, founder, coach, and entrepreneur with a passion for solving hard problems and giving back. Kelly most recently ran the New York City Marathon and fundraised for the Endometriosis Foundation of America's team after being diagnosed with the disease herself. She continues to be an advocate in finding a cure. Kelly, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me. Big fan of the pod, and a few friends have been on it before, so I'm thrilled to be here.
I love that. And I also love how you found me, to be honest. I mean, I do get people reaching out to me on LinkedIn a good amount, but you just took such a personal approach, and I immediately was like, I need to speak to this person.
Yeah, absolutely. Believe it or not, have utilized LinkedIn more in my post-exit journey. And I can't believe the community that I've found on this platform of people with similar interests. And, you know, whether it's running the New York City Marathon and the NYRR groups that we are both involved in, or truly the tech world here in New York, it's pretty cool that the algorithm just pops up with people that you should know.
Yeah, absolutely. So you and I caught up before we got on here today to record. And there was a lot of parallels between your story and the messaging of Mile 40 and the messaging really of this platform. And we're going to dive into all that. But I'd love to give the audience just a quick background on who you are, where you grew up, just so we have an understanding of just dynamics in terms of how life started for you.
Yeah, of course. Well, I'm a very proud Brooklynite. So I grew up here in the five boroughs. I grew up in South Brooklyn. Funny enough, I've lived in three of the five boroughs. So I lived in Manhattan for a bulk of my 20s and moved out to Rockaway Beach, Queens in my 30s. So Queens, Brooklyn, and Manhattan. So that's very unique. You don't hear too many people be in that many boroughs, but I do love New York. I loved I love everything about growing up here. And yeah, I think that's made, you know, the marathon and everything else so much more special of being a native New Yorker.
Yeah, now I'm remembering. You reached out to me after Quincy Moore's episode.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so I have my New Yorker Nowhere poster, and I've followed his story. And yeah, he really smart entrepreneur and just like capitalized exactly that feeling, right? Every time I look at that poster, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like November 5th bottled.
I love it. I love it. I actually just got a print that I'm going to be putting in my new office soon. So I'm excited for that. Because
that's,
you're
awesome.
Right. I mean, you look at it and there's just a lot of power that you can draw from the image. And so I can definitely appreciate that. Tell me a little bit about your family.
Yeah. So I grew up in South Brooklyn. I come from a family first responders. My parents are each one of five kids. I have truly like 60 to 70 first and second cousins here in New York City. And then the remaining of my cousins are in Ireland. So yeah, really, really big family, close knit, you know, just all live within walking distance of each other, really. Yeah, I was, you know, the first one. I'm one of the oldest cousins on my father's side. So oldest grandchild, first in their family to, you know, graduate college. So that was pretty exciting for us. And, you know, many of my cousins followed suit right after me. But yeah, it's been really fun to grow up in a city with so many people that have, you know, unique careers and backgrounds and beliefs and everything, but all share the same DNA and bloodline.
Does it feel like when you grow in that big of a family, does it ever feel like, you know, like, yeah, you probably got to draw boundaries. Everyone's probably all up in your business when you have that many, you know, relatives around all the time.
Well, it's funny. I don't think that the boundaries is the word, and I think there's a lot of opinions.
Yeah.
I don't know if boundaries is a fair thing that we could possibly hold in our family. But I will say, as we get older, everyone's cheering for each other constantly, you know, and I think for me, what I've learned in, you know, my health journey and my career journey and even through running is, you know, we're just naturally risk adverse. And I've always been the one to go out and try something different, right? Like be an entrepreneur or, you know, run a marathon. And I think I have challenged myself in a different way. But I respect the hell out of the work that they do. And they put their lives on the line every single day. And it's just a privilege for me to be able to do what I want to do and have that freedom. Because of, you know, their unwavering support in the career choices they've made for me to have what I have.
Absolutely. What do you think spurred that mentality of, you know, chasing down those goals and kind of stepping outside the box?
Yeah, I think it comes from me not being a traditional student. I really, really struggled as a kid with math, like, you know, really, really struggled with it. And I had cousins actually in my grade and in my class. And my younger brother was in the class behind me. So like the idea of being left back and my self-confidence as like, you know, a non-athlete type kid that, you know, as a girl to be left back because of like my math skills, like that fear, you know, always just like pushed me along to get a C or a D to keep going. Cause I loved reading and I loved all the creative outlets, you know, art and music and all the other parts of school, but math and science held me back so much, in my confidence. And I think it really wasn't until I got into, you know, college and after college where, you know, grades didn't matter. Right. And it was more about like you versus you. So, you know, working in startups from the day I graduated on really allowed me to like feel like the Kelly Parker I was supposed to be, and not just, you know, feel like, oh, I'm not good enough because I don't get, you know, A's in calculus, you know. And like the, you know, they joke around in school, like, oh, you'll never use this stuff. Well, you know, for any kid listening, I still haven't used it. So, you know, I deeply believe that, you know, just doubling down on the things that you are actually good at makes you more successful. And that's what I did. And I didn't find that until I was, you know, older, that I could be good at a job versus good at school.
So when you were younger, what would you say you were good at when you were younger?
I was definitely good at like creative things. Like I was really into like ceramics and anything that was like painting or art. I really loved reading and English and writing. I loved reading about stories of different people. I never liked fiction, always loved nonfiction. So I think all the stories that inspired me were always of real people, right, who achieved these like very big goals. So that was definitely an influence.
Well, anyone in particular stand out from when you were growing up? Any special stories of inspiration that really kind of stood out? And, you know, it could be as simple as like, you know, someone you looked up to, whether it was someone famous or an athlete or, you know, someone in Hollywood.
Yeah, I don't remember the specific book that like tipped me in one direction during that time. But I would say that when I was in college, I met a woman who went to my college, and she was an entrepreneur, and she's from New York. She's somewhat a mentor of mine 20 years later. And she sold her first business to Sephora. And, you know, I just looked at her and I was like, okay, I'm in the same box as this person. And we, you know, marched the same, you know, kind of beat here. Like she got it, I got it. And that was just like eye-opening to me that she was able to come back to the school and talk to us. And yeah, she, you know, I texted her this morning. So like, we're still in constant communication. But yeah, that was really cool for me to see for sure.
And, you know, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but at that point in time, you see someone like that, and you see what they've accomplished. Where is the allure? Is it in their success? Is it in the fact that they were able to, you know, make it that far, eventually sell a business, you know, probably do well for themselves? Or was it the fact that they were able to actually carry on that journey, right? The entrepreneurial journey, which in and of itself is probably a story. There's a lot of ups and downs to that story or that journey. But it takes a certain kind of character to be able to navigate that. So was the allure in kind of the persona who you saw kind of build something? Or was it in, if I do this, like maybe I could be as successful as this person?
Yeah, I think it was more the grit. Immediately, this was the type of person that didn't have it easy, you know, and then was creating a category. And, you know, I don't want to divulge her, you know, family and so on, but she is a real why the same way I do. And I just saw instantly like, okay, this is someone that's going to figure it out. And she's very honest and humble and open about the ups and downs of multiple businesses that she started, some in which have failed, some in which have gone on to be acquired. And I just knew that, you know, what success looks like didn't have to be in a traditional way. And I was just very impressed with that idea. It wasn't to get rich quick or, you know, make a ton of money or be famous. None of those things are why I do anything. I think it's just challenging myself, you know, because I was for many years in the mindset of, oh, I can't do that, or that's not an opportunity for me. And now I've kind of reverse engineered that mindset of like, it's okay if I fail, like I'm the one defining what success looks like, right? So yeah, I don't really let those parameters of what someone else wants for me be what success is.
I love that. And that's a topic we touch on, you know, over and over on this show. And so like, let's dig into, when did you start to realize that it's okay to fail?
Yeah, I think I started to realize it was okay to fail like in startups instantly, because I was behind the scenes, right? Like there would be like, you know, a Fortune or a Forbes article about fundraising and, you know, the success of these companies. And I was behind the scenes and, you know, keeping the lights on and knowing the ins and outs of businesses. And I was like, you know, stories could be spun, you know, and how you define success is really up to you. I remember early on, someone called my business a lifestyle business. And like, you know, they kind of said it as a dig. And I just thought, like, if I could work for myself and the business is profitable and it keeps a roof over my head, that is success for me. You know, I wasn't going after the Forbes or the Fortune article or 30 under 30, right? Like those were all like somewhat vanity metrics for me. For me, it was, hey, you know, I'm navigating somewhat of a health journey with this too. And can I work for myself and navigate a business and my life, typically what would be defined as a lifestyle business? So yeah, they weren't wrong. It was just how they were projecting what success could be for me.
Got it. No, that's very well said. And I think it's really thought-provoking too, because a lot of times people go out there and they build and they are, you know, you can't avoid what people around you are saying. You can't avoid how the world is going to try to define you, how they're going to try to label you. At times you may question yourself. And the truth is no one is really aware of what goes on behind the scenes. And no one can really define who you are anywhere close to, you know, you. But it does take a lot of reflection to get there, I think. I think it takes a lot of reflection to accept that you're going to be, like, there is no finished product, right? Like, we mentioned it at the onset, right? Like, there's never a finished product, despite how far you take whatever it is that you're working on. Before I talk myself in circles, let's give the audience some background now. So you started out in the startup world. Talk about where that took you. How many years were you working in the startup world until eventually you started your own venture?
Yeah. So I was in startups probably close to 10 years, 7 to 10 years before I started my own company. All companies that, you know, people would know, DoorDash, Indeed, a company that was acquired by AOL, another startup that was acquired by WeWork. So I had quite a few tours in startup land, all, you know, acquisitions and IPOs and going through different stages. Some roles I was a leader and some roles I was an individual contributor. And I really just learned ins and outs of solving hard problems. I started my business in 2017. It came from an idea of serving our customers corporate gifts that were personalized and thoughtful. At the time, I was at Managed by Q, and we often would send our customers gifts and, you know, had a small budget to take them out for coffee or lunch or so on. And I realized whenever I sent something that was unpersonalized or quick to the office, like, you know, cookies or something, I never got a thank you. But whenever I listened to someone and they said, like, actually, you know, I don't know, like, I adore, you know, the New York Knicks, and I sent them like something that was Nick related or their college, or they were going on vacation and I sent them a book of a travel guide, right, for that location. I'd always get a personalized thank you. And, it just built rapport, and I was able to, like, you know, unlock so much more in business. So what I did was I started interviewing office managers and marketing teams and event planners on what do they send, what are they looking for when they're looking for a corporate gifting company. And instead of, like, just presenting a product and being like, hey, would you ever need this? I just started building for the things that they already told me that they would be looking for.
Wow. I mean, it makes so much sense. I've worked most of my career on the sales side of things. And that personalization is the true distinguishment. I mean, we all know that. But there is definitely an art behind how to craft it.
Right.
And that's something that I feel that, you know, you took to heart with regards to building it out. How many years were you working on it?
Yeah. So I was working on the business for 3 to 4 years, and I actually, the business was profitable and running itself. I was running it from home, and we had acquired a ton of, like, household customers, like Sales Loft and Whole Foods, and you know, this is all running from my parents' house in Brooklyn. I can't get over that we had pallets of things going into my childhood home. But yeah, that's really what the grind was like for those early years. And then in 2019, when the business was profitable, I really started to miss that, like, team aspect and building again. And it was just time for me to go back to, like, having a full-time job, and an opportunity opened up at DoorDash. So I had taken the role at DoorDash in behind the scenes. Like, my business was running itself, you know, orders were going out, really didn't have to do anything. At that point, I wasn't, like, acquiring new customers. It was just, you know, what it was going on. And then in 2020, I was reintroduced to Urban Stems, and we had a handful of conversations. The pandemic hit, and by mid of that year, like July, we had come to terms with this was a fit for an acquisition. And the fall of 2020, they acquired the business, and it was an acqui-hire, so I came over. So yeah, 4 years in total. I would say 5 years, like, in terms of ideation, 4 years working on it, and 1 year working under it when it was acquired for Urban Stems. So 5 years total.
You know, you talk about it, and a lot of things that you've talked about so far, like, I love how articulate you are in terms of delivering the confidence in your journey. And I mean, those are just words that I just kind of mashed up together, because you talk about it in a way that made it sound really smooth entirely throughout. And I keep thinking to myself, like, at what point, like, you must have had so many highs throughout the journey. And, you know, I think to myself, like, if I was her, I would have been questioning myself every part of the way. And even to the point of acquisition, like, at that point, like, I am honestly, if it was me, and a lot of times with some of the things that I've had happen in my own life, to this date, I feel like I won up somebody, or like I got away with a fast one. Do you ever feel like that, or did it ever feel like that as you were kind of building things out?
Yeah, I think, like, the element of imposter syndrome is everywhere, and I think it creeps in for solo entrepreneurs. And I think, again, it's double downing on your skill set, right? Like, anytime, you know, there was an accounting or operations question that I couldn't handle, sure, I had those lows, right? Like, I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm not capable of running this business. But then anytime, you know, I would get a referral and someone would be like, hey, of course you should speak to Kelly, she's, like, our go-to gifting person. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm good at. Like, I could help you, you know? So it was really, like, gravitating to the parts of the business that I love, and, like, finding people that were way smarter than me and experts in their area to consult and advise. I would also say it's a hell of a lot easier to make those decisions when I was only thinking about one person. I admittedly did not have employees. I had freelancers on different projects. I also do not have children and I'm partnerless. And I would say if I had those things during that moment in my life, I would have failed in some aspect of my life. And there were probably things that I were lacking on in terms of my health and wellness and sleep and all the things that a regular founder lacks. But my true metric of success was only possible because of where I was at that moment in my personal life as well.
What did you learn the most about yourself in those 4 years?
Wow. Not to go too deep on this, but I will say I learned how important it is to make your own noise and make your own community. I was building at a time where I deeply missed being in the office with the Managed by Q guys and grabbing coffee with my girlfriends and being like, hey, New York, let's rock and roll. A lot of that was eliminated by like work from home and packing orders and having to miss out. You know, being in a holiday business, you just miss out on friends and family's birthdays and special occasions and holidays. So I deeply missed having a sense of community and building with other people. Now that I'm on, you know, my second venture, that is so much easier to do because I'm not in a physical product business right now, nor if I join one, I wouldn't pack orders again. Like there's so many things I would do differently. But I've now made an even bigger community and don't feel alone. But for anyone who is considering being a founder, one of the things that I share with a lot of founders and they've confided in me is truly how lonely it is. And I was alone in building. And that's what I've learned is in order for me to be successful, it's sharing those wins with other people and elevating them as well. So having community is everything.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. And something that I've definitely touched on a lot with this show is that loneliness aspect, especially when you're building something and especially something that, you know, is a baby for you essentially, and that you see a lot of potential in. And, you know, in certain instances, of course, with you, other people saw potential, but I'm sure there were some people that didn't see the potential. And, you know, that's when it gets really tough sometimes because it's like they're talking poorly about your baby.
Exactly. not my kid.
Yeah, not my kid. And so I, you know, I could definitely, you know, lean into that. And you talk a lot about doubling down on your skill set and, you know, the things that you're good at. What skill got most refined? You know, what were you bad at that potentially got most refined throughout all this?
Yeah. I wouldn't say it was like, I mean, there was a point that I was too direct or rough around the edges or, you know, have that like Brooklyn kid in me that, you know, wasn't as soft spoken. And I think that I've learned that, you know, deep down I'm rooting for everyone. I'm genuinely nice, but I know that tone and reflection and having that in the moment, especially during like something of critical need or an emergency. So I would say that was something that I had to learn the most of like, hey, just because I'm very tough and I could receive, you know, that type of critical feedback, or, you know, hard feedback, not everyone reacts. Yeah, exactly. So I've learned a lot and I've had, I think from going through my own health journey and, you know, having a chronic illness and, you know, a true disability at work, it's changed me to be more empathetic to other people's situations and has formed me to be, you know, such a stronger leader to other folks because I've now softened with experiencing that.
Well, I think that's the perfect segue, right? Because, you know, I feel like a lot of people who know you from the outside, who don't know you that well, know who you are because of some of your success professionally. But what, you know, you just kind of talked about was like the merger of how you built the company while also, you know, going through your own battle personally, and a battle that quite frankly, a lot of people know little about, when other people are going through it. You know, it's a hidden battle. And so let's segue into that now, because this is where I think the podcast gets good. We have to give them all. We have to give them all the background information. We have to, you know, let them know who you are. And you know, no doubt, you know, you're a rock star with what it is that you've built and how you've established yourself as a leader and a founder. But where it all comes together now is how you've become the voice that you are today. So let's talk a little bit about your background there and some of the medical issues that you were facing.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about my childhood, and I think this is where like the confidence and everything that was lacking during that time is I started having extreme symptoms when I was 9 of debilitating pain and like stints where I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to go play sports. I didn't want to be with my friends. And I was just dismissed over and over again by doctors and, you know, school nurses and physicians and family members, because everything would come back normal all the time. And I would get these really, really bad pains and truly to the point where I was seeing stars and vomiting. And this went on for truly years. Like when I say like this started when I was, you know, in middle school, grammar school, all the way through college. And then in my mid 20s, it just came to a head. It got so severely worse. And it truly got so bad that when I was thinking about starting a company, it was because I could no longer go to work. I was going to meetings and like at the point of, you know, close to fainting. I was chipping my teeth from grinding them so hard because of the pain, and in and out of doctors all the time. Blood tests are normal and so on. And it's crazy to say this, but I did not get diagnosed. I had multiple surgeries for, you know, what they found were non-cancerous polyps or cysts or, you know, uterine fibroids, but never anything. And then finally, after 5 years of going to the same doctor, I was like, okay, I need a second opinion. And with the help of my parents, and my aunts and uncles and everyone else who saw me suffering, like my closest family, I had said out loud, if another doctor doesn't help, and I've been doing this for 20 years, I want a psych eval. Like I was so convinced that if everyone doesn't believe me, this can't be real. And I was just so convinced by doctors that there was nothing and that this was just a women's problem. And, you know, women have cramps, they have periods, this is normal. And I just knew in my heart, like I have friends, I have friends who, you know, can function and I can't. Like every month cannot function. So I was like, this is just apples and oranges. I know it's not right. And sure enough, it was a few months after the acquisition. So I was at Urban Stems and I finally got an appointment with a specialist and they did an MRI and they found late stage endometriosis all over my uterus, kidneys, bowels. So it wasn't just in, you know, that area, it had spread to my other organs. And truly, my surgeon looked at me after seeing the MRI results and was like, I'm so sorry. I don't know how anyone could have possibly lived like this. And it was the first time I was validated in 26 years since my first symptom. So since then, I've had, I went into, after that meeting with her, I went in for a laparoscopic surgery. It was 8.5 hours long in the middle of COVID. So it was, everyone was masked up. I couldn't have friends or family visit. I was out by the next day, and I was supposed to take something like 6 to 8 weeks off from work. But unfortunately, I was only 6 months into the acquisition, and I came back to the office within like 5 days. And, you know, now looking back, it was like one of the biggest mistakes probably of my career to go back that early with stitches and, you know, being as sick as I was, you know, having to walk again and so on. But that was a defining moment for me. I think I got the validation of like 26 years of being dismissed, and it just lit something in me, like to the point where I was like, I know this is a personal problem, and it's, you know, it's traditionally taboo to talk about women's health in this way, or periods, or saying uterus, like, and I was just like, I will scream it from the rooftops that, you know, I survived this, and that there's no cure, and I'm going to get progressively worse and so on, and all of these terrible things. And I just, at that moment, decided I'm going to be a voice, and I'm going to be an advocate for this disease. And that's where we're at. I'm just getting started. But yeah, it was certainly the hardest thing I've ever had to go through in my entire life.
If you know me, you know that I like to look good and feel good. As an endurance athlete who trains daily, I need my wardrobe to fit the mold. Rhone creates performance-driven clothing for your active lifestyle. Each piece is designed for versatility and made with integrity to outfit you for an active life lived on your own terms. The Rhone promise is to help you move forever forward. Use code MILE40 for 20% off online and in-store for new customers only. Visit www.rhone.com. That's Rhone, spelled R-H-O-N-E. Or find your local store and move forever forward starting today. Thank you for sharing that. I so many times during, you know, what you were saying, like my heart dropped. Because I can't imagine it. And I understand the frustration of feeling pain that other people can't see. And because they can't see it, you know, and even doctors, I mean, I know that no one does it on, and especially doctors, I know that a lot of times when they're giving prognosis, that none of it is done on purpose. I had a similar story when I was younger. Right before my 13th birthday, I was vomiting a lot. I was getting these really bad headaches. My dad went to take me to a couple of doctors who blew it off as viral, or, you know, he's a kid, something's going around. The third doctor that we saw kind of gave the same answer. And at that point, I wasn't old enough like you were to kind of advocate for myself. And my dad, you know, kind of demanded they do a CAT scan at that point. And that's when they found a golf ball sized mass in my brain. And so I tell this story only to tell you, like, the everyday person doesn't realize the amount of pain that you can walk around with. And no one can truly measure your tolerance for that pain. And, you know, the joke that I get is like, I'm pretty pain tolerant, despite the fact that I'm a little soft sometimes, but I'm pretty pain tolerant. And so just hearing you talk about that kind of touched me, because it really is something that I feel like isn't talked about enough. And I do wonder, now that, you know, you do what you do and you advocate and you speak to other women and, you know, you have your platform, what advice do you give people who are walking around in a situation similar to the one that you were walking in for, you know, that 25 years?
Yeah, it's, you know, and I think it's exactly right. Like, I can relate so much to your story of, you know, being a kid and just wanting, you know, being told like, this is a personal matter. Don't, you know, you don't talk about this and so on. And then being an adult and like wanting to scream and being like, hey, you know, I'm desperate here. And the hardest thing about endometriosis specifically, it affects one in every 10 women. But some women have no symptoms at all. Some women don't even know they have the disease until they're trying for their first child, and they find out they're having infertility issues. And then there are other women on the opposite end of the spectrum of the disease that are like me that, you know, have pain. You know, there's 28 days in a cycle and have pain for half of them. So, and the belief is really hard because you could see me out running one day and being happy and being on a podcast and running a business, but people don't see the other side of it, of the surgeries, the medicines, you know, all the supplements, all the side effects of the disease, you know? So, it's definitely, hard because every single woman with this disease has a different, outcome and different symptoms of it. Right. So when I'm first speaking about it, you know, everyone wants to tell either their story or a friend of their story of, oh, I know someone with it who did have children, or I know someone with endo that had to have a hysterectomy. So what we've done in, like, you know, the support groups and being able to talk is really giving that safe space for people to say what they're going through, because, you know, everyone's is different. There are women in my group that they found endo on their brain and their heart and their other organs. Like, people don't think that it's a full body disease, but you could have thoracic endo and, like, lose your ability to breathe. So it really is a disease that needs a lot more attention. And it's not just, you know, awareness and fundraising for a cure. It's also having the research dollars. One thing that we're really advocating for at the Endometriosis Foundation is, you know, legislation and research dollars, right? Like, we need this studied. One in 10 women have this. It's affecting their quality of life and infertility. We need this studied. We need, you know, opportunities outside of surgery, because surgery doesn't cure it. It just, you know, alleviates some of the pain. So the only good side that I will say of this disease and what I've learned is I've met some of the strongest, most remarkable people on the planet who truly battle it every day. And it's such a privilege to be a part of the community. So on the days that I can, and, you know, share my story and go out and fundraise and, you know, run marathons for the EndoFound, it's no longer about me and it's all about them, because there are so many women behind me. I might age out of my potential, you know, fertility or so on of what this disease does to me, but everything I do is for the generations behind me. So, like, clinical trials and support groups, you know, I'm not going to stop until we find a cure.
Thank you. It's incredibly powerful just to hear you say, and I'm grateful for you for sharing it and for being open about it and for leading by example, and also for educating some of us. You know, I'm sure there are some listeners out there who, you know, didn't know some of that context about endometriosis. I didn't know that, you know, it could get to the brain. I didn't know that. And so I appreciate that, because I think just hearing that, if you're listening to this episode, hopefully, you know, hopefully about 20 minutes ago, you Googled endometriosis if you didn't know what it was already. And you're learning more about it. And to your point, it is more prevalent. I do know other people who have been diagnosed with it. But it's not talked about nearly enough. And a lot of times on the surface, people just associate it with childbearing. And correct me if I'm wrong, that's probably the most popular side effect of being diagnosed. And people don't take a second to think about the pain that you're potentially walking around with dealing with it, or the medical interventions that you might need while you're dealing with it. And so I just want to call that out. As it pertains to the conversations that you're having around it and the community that you've built, can you tell me a little bit about when you started getting comfortable building and engaging with that community?
Absolutely. So it wasn't overnight, just like anything. Nothing is an overnight success. And, you know, I went through a really tough period of grief. And, you know, it was kind of like both of my worlds collided between navigating this health journey and navigating the exit of my company. I was grieving, you know, the loss post life of what my company was, and what my career was going to look like after that. And I was grieving this future that I felt like I kept putting on hold, right? Like, I know I want to be a mom. That's not something that I've ever questioned, really, or more recently feel even more inclined to on my journey to motherhood. So I was just grieving, you know, what if that doesn't happen, right? Like, what, like, I'm gonna get progressively worse. And then I was having all of these big thoughts and feelings of like, hey, it's not just if I can have kids, what if I can have kids and I get progressively worse and I can't show up as the parent I want to? And that was the biggest piece of grief for me, truly, was what if I can't, you know, play with my kids? What if I can't run? What if I, you know, what if this disease really takes over? And those were the things that I had to work through, like those big feelings and fears, before I could ever help someone else. And it was really doing the work and, you know, going through that grief and just getting up every day and like doing the mindless tasks of like the dishes and being able to wash dishes without thinking like, you know, what does my future hold, or what is this like? You know, you just going through the motions, and like grief is such a heavy thing because you think you're past it and then like something hits you right back, you know? So I went through a lot of coaching and worked with, you know, some doctors to get through that period of time in my life. And it was really after that big surgery where I booked, hadn't ran a mile in my life. And I just put on the calendar, I want to run a half marathon. And I signed up for the Miami half. And it was awesome. And just, you know, I went through that. And then I kind of got the running bug and, you know, had another surgery after the Miami half and then ran the Brooklyn half. And it was during that time where I was able to meet the running community and be more involved in the EndoFound. And it was when I was finally comfortable with, okay, I'm Kelly. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to help myself and put on some running shoes and run it out and, you know, get out of my own way. And by building that community and that outlet for me, I was able to start meeting other women in these support groups, all virtually. And I would say probably by number five, I was able to get through my story without tears. And now I could probably get through it a lot of times without tears. But yeah, I think running changed that mindset, and meeting other people who have gone through this allowed me to really start to show up for other people. And I know that there are people out there that will listen to this and say, like, Kelly was my first phone call when I was struggling with a diagnosis. And to me, that is more powerful than any medal, any money I raised, because it's like, that is my personal impact of like, hey, I suffered for 26 years before a diagnosis. And because of that, I was able to show up for someone else, and they were able to ask the doctors what questions, go for the right tests, and get a diagnosis. So I'm already seeing kind of the work that I had to do internally show up and help people externally.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You alluded to earlier the loneliness of being an entrepreneur and simultaneously the loneliness of carrying this journey on your own. And now, you know, you've kind of turned the story completely around and the narrative has completely changed now where, you know, there's no loneliness anymore. You know, that there's community, there's engagement. I'm sure there's moments of shared tears and hugs and just comfort and like just knowing, that you're not alone. And when it's something like that, that is so deeply personal, I'm sure there's, you know, very few feelings that are as comforting as knowing that, there's someone out there who understands. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest challenges adults face in general is just being understood. And that's just on a normal level. But when they're carrying around with them a diagnosis or a circumstance that's not necessarily the norm, they seek that community. And so, you know, it's very special to hear. I want to make sure now we touch on the New York City Marathon.
Yeah, and the good journey. Stuff.
The journey to the finish line in Central Park. So why don't you walk us through that?
Yeah. So, like I said, after my large surgery, I signed up for a few half marathons. I was not a runner, historically not really athletic. And when I first started in 2020, 2021, I couldn't run a mile. I'm still back of the pack. You know, on a good day, I'm running 12s and 13s. And on a normal day, it's like, it could be 15, you know, minute miles. The marathon, you know, if you add up all the breaks that I took, much, much longer than that. But no, this is proof that the universe works in an amazing way. I was able to find a run coach. He found me actually. And I worked with him and he actually recommended that I find a community close to New York to be involved in. And, I had, after my second half, I had just this inkling, like, if I run the New York City Marathon, it's going to be for the EndoFound and I should do that. And I really mean it. I manifested doing this like years before I even had the opportunity. I used to work the marathon through their event company. And every year I would just watch the runners and be like, hey, I'm going to do this one day. So this has always been something that I wanted to do. And I got the phone call early August, just 3 months before with no prior training, that there was a spot on the EndoFound team for me. And I was like, yep, I'm in, I'll do it. And everyone was like, you know, I knew I wasn't ready for it, but I just have this mindset shift of, I don't know when my body's ever going to be ready for anything, right? Because that's just what this disease has done. I've had 7 surgeries and all of them have come to me as a surprise. You know, like I've never been like, all right, it's Tuesday, time for another surgery, right? It's like you go for a test and they're like, hey, you have to get to the emergency room. So anyway, I got in, I immediately joined a run club, the Badass Lady Gang of New York. They are amazing. They're a pace inclusive group. My coach recommended that I find people that are like me of all different paces. And I met the team coach. Her name is also Kelly. And I said, hey, like, want to join the team, blah, blah, blah. She's like, it's free. We meet on Tuesdays. You'd be perfect. Met a ton of friends. And I was like, oh, by the way, I'm running the New York City Marathon. And her jaw like dropped. She was like, that's in, you know, 80 days. And like, there was no base, there was nothing. And I was like, I'll walk it if I have to. Like, I don't care if it takes me 3 days, I'm going to be out there all night. I mean it. And there was never, you know, a day. I just spent 3 months training and it was weight training and walk runs. And, you know, my longest mile up to the training part was 16 miles on a treadmill because it rained every Saturday, every long run, up until the race. But I just love the sport so much and I love the city. And I just knew that if I'm ever going to do it, I was given the chance. And, you know, I don't know where I'm going to be or what my body is going to be able to do. So I made it to the start. And to me, that was the finish line, you know, like to be able to just have enough courage for someone like me that knew I was going to be out there all day, 7+ hours. Closer to 8 hours, I think takes more courage than, you know, I even thought I had in me, to say like, I'm going to be there soaking wet in the dark with a dead watch, dead headphones, a dead phone. And I'm just gonna, you know, go out there and do it. But yeah, it was one of the best days of my life. And I am so proud to have said that, you know, not only did I make it to the finish line, but I even made it to the start and I didn't let the fear of failing miss that opportunity.
I'm incredibly proud of you. And I'm so grateful that you're sharing that because I think that it's definitely just so powerful for you to share that for the listeners out there. And for your vulnerability and just being authentic about it. And when we first met, I think you made a joke and maybe it was a joke, maybe it was real about how, I don't know if you were going over the Queensboro about halfway through and the bus was right behind you or what is it at the end of the race? Is it a bus or is it a cop car or whatever it is at the end of the, at the end of the race?
No, and that I really just, happened.
Yeah. And I had that vision in my head after we talked. And for me, I just think that that's such an incredible vision of resolve, resiliency, grit, determination, you know, arguably more so than the people who are finishing in record times. Because despite the fact that those people had to put in, you know, a ton of work to get to where they are, you know, I think the mental battle that you had to fight, you know, despite the fact that you're, you know, up against a condition that you've been battling your entire life, which has been, you know, just chronic in terms of the impact when it comes to pain, when it comes to testing your ability to handle adverse situations, adverse moments. On top of that, you had a very short period to train for anyone, let alone someone who hasn't run a marathon before. And you had the right mindset. You didn't give up and you kept powering through. And, you know, I think those stories are the most powerful stories that come out of that day every single year. Was there a specific moment in the race that either you recall for good reason or bad?
Yeah, I mean, the bus was so special. You would have thought I came in first place with the cheering of the people when I beat the sweeper bus over the bridge. I mean it, I get chills. Like, people were just screaming because I had my shirt and it said Kelly. People were just screaming Kelly. Like, I was in front of the bus and then they cut the bridge. And that didn't mean that you couldn't keep running. Like, they just put you to the sidewalk and open up the bridge. But it was the, you know, the most amazing feeling to say that like I beat the sweeper bus. And then at the finish line, first of all, I have to say just thanking every single volunteer, every police officer, every DSMY sanitation worker, firefighter, like all the people out there that were still out for the last 1,000 runners are just incredible. Project Finish, like my team. So you know, when I finally got into Central Park and I knew this was happening, there was never one thought in the 8 hours that I was going to quit. Like that, it didn't even pain, nothing. Like it never even occurred to me that this was going to, I was going to not finish. Like that just wasn't going to happen. But I got there and one of my friends, Marianne, was there on the corner and ran me into the park. And then I got to the park and my brother was on one of the grandstands screaming and my entire team was at the finish line on the left-hand side. And the announcer said, Kelly, you have the most incredible fans out here tonight. And I just lost it. I'm crying like right now thinking about it. It was the most special moment I could ever dream of, to have so many people there. And I opened up my phone once it was back to battery in the Uber home. And I just had like 40 to 50 messages of friends and family who were watching it on TV, because everyone had been home by that point and they were watching it, and people were screenshotting from their living room, like me crossing the finish line. So I thought that was even better, because for all the people that go out for the marathon, you don't usually get to see your friends cross the finish line, but every single one of my friends got to see that because they were watching on their phones and in their homes. So it really was the best day. And I hope to continue to do it and raise awareness for the EndoFound. But for my first marathon, I don't think I could ever replace what occurred. It was so special.
And oh man, that truly culminates what this show is about, right? Like, you put yourself in a position to do something incredibly difficult. And you know, you had the right mentality throughout the 8 hours. I have to ask, the minute you crossed the finish line, what did you feel?
Yeah. So the minute I crossed, I thought I was going to cry and I thought I was going to have all these feelings, but there was a gap between the line and the medal volunteers.
Sure. Yep.
And I had the fear that I wasn't going to get the medal because I couldn't see. Everyone was screaming Kelly, and then I was trying to find a volunteer to give me a medal. So I did have a panic for like 2 minutes of like, it felt like
eight hours out there. Right, you better got your medal.
Right. And actually, a guy in the Bronx said that to me. He's like, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Brooklyn." And he screamed, "Brooklyn, you better get the F to the finish line and get your medal." And I was just 7 minutes shy of missing the Abbott. So I did achieve my Abbott star. But if you're over the 8 hour mark, you don't receive it. So I was really proud to say that I got, you know, one of my five or six. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we got to get you to the six.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I'll ever do more of it, but I know that New York City left me with wanting so much more, and I will certainly be back out there at some point.
That's amazing. I really appreciate you walking us through that. I mean, these stories never get old for me, and just gets me pumped up to hear it every single time. You know, as we round things out now, Kelly, like, we've talked about someone who decided to pave her own path. You talked about that from childhood. You went about throwing yourself in the startup world, eventually building and selling your own company, to then, you know, talking about navigating a lifelong illness, something that, again, is invisible, isn't talked about as much as it should be, that has plagued you with pain for years, to ultimately turning that into what you've built now. And I think just that vision of you crossing the finish line of after being out there for 8 hours and the bus, I mean, that's the vision I'm always going to remember, just because I think it's incredibly powerful for, you know, for someone who's been a part of these races for so long. And when I first started, I was, you know, not the fastest person out there for sure. And so I know exactly what it feels like to be, you know, where you were. I think if you were to pull it all together and think about a theme that defines Kelly, think about a headline, a potential name of your book, you know, what would it be? You know, how would you define your journey in its entirety? And perhaps that story is still being written, but, you know, how do you want to carry it forward?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people have different mantras. And my uncle actually gave me this, it's moved mountains. And I just always think about that. Like, I'm a city person. I actually don't enjoy mountains. I hate training on hills. Like, that is literally my least part of any race, is a hill or, any obstacle, but somehow I just like kind of bear down and get through it. And I move through it. And, yeah, it's not something I like, right? I don't enjoy the pain. I don't enjoy the hard work and the long nights of building businesses and going through doctor's appointments and all the shitty parts of navigating those things. But yeah, I think moving mountains is something that I've always just gone head first into my goals and try to avoid as many obstacles as I can.
I love it. And you've certainly put it on display in every element, every aspect of your life. And personally, I'm incredibly grateful that you took the time to share this with me. I think I have a lot to take away from this. I've learned on this. Again, I really hope that the listeners out there, if you have it, please be sure to check out Kelly. Check out the Endometriosis Foundation. Take a second to educate yourself if you don't know, if you're unaware, because to Kelly's point, one in every 10, right? One in every 10 women are potentially walking around with this. And although it's not talked about, it's something that should definitely be getting more airtime and more attention. And I want to thank you, Kelly, for bringing that attention to the table here on Mile 40 and for opening up and sharing your story with us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on Mile 40 and best of luck in London. I'll be rooting you on from New York.
You got it. Thank you for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode of the Mile 40 podcast, go ahead, subscribe, leave a review, and share the word. Thank you for being a part of the Mile 40 family, and let's unite in showing the world that comebacks are always greater than setbacks.